The Midweek Drive Team, four words which signify quality and all that's best in audio entertainment.
Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire. I let you love what I thought it was funny. You came along and woo, now honey. I've changed my mind, this love is fine. Great balls of fire. Kisses, baby. Feels good. Hold me, baby. Well, I want to love you like I love a shoe. You're fine. So kind. Got to tell this world that you're mine, 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 mine. I chew my nails and then I twiddle my thumb. I'm real on earth, but it sure is fun. Come on, baby. It drives me crazy. It's just great balls of fire. Hold me, baby. Well, I want to love you like I love a should. You're fine, so kind. Got to tell this world that you're mine, 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 mine. That you're mine, that you're mine. I quit on my thumb. Real nervous, but it sure is fun. Come on, baby. Drive crazy. Goodness gracious, it's great balls of fire.
Great Balls of Fire, Jerry Lee Lewis, a character called Ben, and of course Jerry as well, and William Shatner, and Silent Running, and of course Arthur Weingarten, of course, for whom the Arthur Weingarten Award was named after. And we may be joined by Jessica Burtis to indeed give her views on this Arthur Weingarten scripted episode from, of course, the Spelling Goldberg camp, T.J. Hooker's Season 2 adventure, Deadly Ambition. Let's jump straight into our French correspondent and ace singer, of course, Victoria Simmons. I'm sure if Jerry Lee Lewis was still functioning, he would have loved to have been a backing pianist for some of your work, Victoria. But what did you make of this particular adventure?
Well, I actually liked it. There you go. No, it had everything in it. They had the double...
Double Jeopardy.
He's done it. No, he's done it. There we go. And the suspense, and then slightly weird acting at times, but it was really good.
It was a series which, certainly for those of us who are around first time in the 80s, was possibly quite difficult to take seriously, because in many ways, what we saw with James T. Kirk reversed as T.J. Hooker was somebody who seemed in many cases, to be more concerned with his extraordinary hairpiece, which was a whole new sort of world for discussion, etc. But yet, actually, over the years, I think so. Although he would deny it clearly. And who are we to actually change the whole notion with respect to the joys of William Shatner's scenario? But it is something which, funnily enough, and not just because Arthur Weingarten scripted this, I think the five seasons of T.J. Hooker, which obviously very much centered on the 80s, followed through that detective genre. And indeed, fresh from the detective world where we were looking at New York podcasts all about Murder, We Spoke and the team there. Jessica, any thoughts from yourself on this particular episode of T.J. Hooker?
I had never heard of T.J. Hooker, so this was definitely interesting. And it feels so weird to see William Shatner not in space. So it's funny to see him on Earth running around. But I think that it was really fun. I don't tend to watch detective shows very much. I think the closest I watched to a detective show would be like Nancy Drew movies and Bones, which aren't really proper, you know, detective shows like this with like a city kind of gritty and things like that. So it was fun getting to watch this. It was definitely a different genre for me, but I thought it was fun. I love a good heist plot and I love complicated loyalties and some backstabbing plot. And I think it ended up being really fun. Yeah, I just think it was a nice introduction, I guess, to this series, and I had no clue it existed, so it was fun getting to see something new.
Well, that's at the heart of Resonance Rewind, of course. We had most of the standard lines in this series. Most of the major characters had been established. Of course, we were going to be added to by James Darren later on, but Vince Romano, played by Adrian Zmed, who was indeed a guest on the Midweek Drive back at the end of the 20th century and did various things with us, including portraying the lead role in Grease 2. And of course, Heather Locklear, often a key part of the 80s zeitgeist as Officer Stacey Sheridan, who, of course, we didn't see quite explicitly made the connection between Stacey Sheridan and Richard Hurd's character. But basically, the captain was the father of Stacey Sheridan. And you'd be pleased to know she actually gets out and about and does some action as well as the series proceeds. Jared, what about yourself? Were you also a novice to the world of Romano, 4 Item 30, T.J. Hooker and more?
So I had heard of the series before when looking up Shatner's filmography from Star Trek. So I've heard of it, but I've never watched it. So this was my first intake with into the world of T.J. Hooker. And so far, I think I really did enjoy the episode. There were times where I did think it did drag a bit, and there was a bit of dialogue which I think were a bit corny. And I did think the aesthetics was very like very 80s TV show, and I could see that coming forward to it. But ultimately, I really enjoyed the episode. I really enjoyed the sort of the loyalties and sort of the way they characterized T.J. Hooker, that he's not just your ordinary cop. He actually generally does care for the people he serves. And yeah, I just ultimately enjoyed it. And I think it is very reminiscent of a lot of the TV shows I used to grow up with 80s sort of like style. So it was very interesting to see.
I think probably the key point of this series, and this is why I would have been very keen to actually ask Arthur Weingarten this very question. I mean, whether he would have actually said, well, it was a committee-based decision. But there was one sequence in the hospital, the Valley Hospital, which was often used many a time for locations, certainly when the crime dramas were sent to Los Angeles. And it was the interplay between Ben Edwards, of course, the friend of T.J. Hooker, who effectively has been framed or could well be framed for effectively providing insider information for the diamond heist, etc. Was this line in which Ben Edwards says to Hooker, there's all kinds of reasons for ambition. I remember the day you took off that gold badge to climb back into that blue suit. I thought you were crazy. To which Hooker replies, I climbed to the top of the detective ladder. I found it empty, so I climbed back down, got back in touch, which in a real sense kind of echoes his experience as James T. Kirk in Star Trek The Motion Picture, where he does pretty much exactly the same thing. He ascends to the top of the ladder, finds he's not actually appreciated, though, doesn't like the sort of area, and goes back to the actual standard work, which I thought was one of the most piquant moments. Probably would be my favourite moment of the whole thing. But let's find out what Victoria's favourite moment was in terms of Deadly Ambition.
Ooh, favourite moment. See, I wrote down loads of things because I knew you asked questions. And did I remember to actually put down my favourite part? No. No, obviously, I love the fact that Jerry Lee Lewis was in it. I don't know how many stars maybe in the 80s that were singers were actually going into, I don't know, a detective series. That seems to be quite an interesting alley to go down. Was Arthur and Weingarten and Jerry Lee Lewis friends or something? And just said, I'll get you in, it's fine. It's always a nice way to go. I quite liked the whole story of him protecting his half-brother. I think most of these scenarios with that was kind of touching.
And, of course, wanting to be a hero as well, which is why I think the interplay between Hooker and Ben is particularly interesting. There is one minor glitch which still kind of concerns me, and it's a minor thing where when Hooker effectively goes to the end sequence and he's looking to actually capture the rogue investigator, etc. I'm sure he actually sort of doesn't step carefully over the infrared alarm beam. So why didn't it actually go off? But maybe that was just by the by. I mean, because normally Shatner was so demonstrably athletic in these shows, we didn't really get the Hooker run, which was very much a narrative trope that many of the episodes had, where he would usually head off in pursuit of a villain, usually a good 400 or 500 yards at least behind him, but he would phenomenally actually sort of catch him up and wrestle him to the ground as well, which for a chap in his late 50s was not bad. Probably could still do it in his 90s now. Anyway, Jessica, what about your honourable mentions and favourite moments, please?
I really like the stunts. I thought they were very fun. I think part of the fun, it seems, of these kind of, like these types of detective shows is just seeing all the different, like, gunfights and the leaping around buildings and climbing up ladders. And it just seems really fun. Like, half of the show just seems like parkour. And I just like that's, I feel like that's so much more entertaining than it probably is in real life. I feel like the stunt doubles or the actors must have been having a great time with that. Definitely seems like a workout. But I think also the ending was really interesting, how you know, he had that moment where the gun was turned on him, and then he had a couple snappy lines. It was all about friendship. He has friends, and that's the important thing. And I think any scene with Romano was so entertaining. I don't know, he was great. So I think that he just made the scenes really fun.
And of course, we have the ultimate denouement of Romano, who, after apparently being accused by Stacey of being a social climber with Miss Pamela and liking to actually head off to a string quartet concert, in the end, he's so annoyed that he's introduced as somebody who works in law enforcement as opposed to being a cop, which is all he wants to be, just an ordinary cop, and a blue-collar cop as well from that line, which, again, I thought was particularly pertinent. And it's no surprise that this was actually a key favourite in the 80s with a lot of Republican politicians. I think it echoed the kind of Ronald Reagan period of the time, where you had a notion that you know, you could actually solve problems relatively straightforwardly, especially if you have, obviously, a firm moral stance and some substantial artillery as well in terms of weaponry. So I'm not sure in terms of what it says in terms of that about the other aspect. There hasn't been a T.J. Hooker movie as yet, but the closest was the opening of the Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, Charlie's Angels, where one of the lines in the opening thing is that it's T.J. Hooker, the movie that the protagonists are actually watching in their aircraft. But who knows what might actually happen. Jared, what about your favourite moments?
Well, for me, I think I had two favorite moments. I think for me, it was the beginning where the one of the heist people just gets on the roof and then makes the jump attempt. And it's just the fact that he tries it while also being advised when Hooker said, you never make it. And it's like the fact that he nearly made it, but he didn't. And then he ended up falling. And the way the music plays out is that I don't know if it was meant to be comedic, but like the guy falls to his death. So I mean, it's not a very nice scene, but it's just how the music does it. It's sort of like a Looney Tunes thing, and I couldn't stop laughing when he just did the jump and he just fell. I was like, well, there it goes. And I think it was then the bit where Hooker was explaining about him not liking the job as a detective and then working his way back down. I think I really did enjoy that scene, especially. I think it just showed the character that at the end of the day, I think similar to Kirk, he does want to make a difference. He doesn't want to be in like the Admiral's chair where he's sitting on the sidelines, not doing anything. He actually wants to be out there saving people, doing his so. I did think that was a little bit of a homage to Kirk's character, because that's what he tends to do later on after the original series, is that they try to get him on the Admiral's seat and it still doesn't work. And even demoted to captain again, still didn't work. So, yeah.
Certainly, the aspect of Hooker that we didn't really see reference to in this particular episode, but did see over the seasons, although it wasn't necessarily a story arc, but it did come out that Hooker, obviously, also his marriage went to heck in a handbasket because he was so dedicated to his work. And I think it was that over-dedication and clearly becoming a sergeant or being demoted to a sergeant and therefore actually having to look after the new recruits. We constantly see the screenshots, the stock footage of the recruits that are actually learning to be the next generation of cops, etc. There's very much to the fore here. Okay, let's move in to characters and so on, because we haven't really explored, other than obviously Adrian Smed's role as Officer Romano and William Shatner as Sergeant T.J. Hooker, some of the other areas within this whole field, because clearly you've got some substantive actors there. Royce D. Applegate as Frank Durbin, who seems to be perspiring very heavily in his trailer before he's eventually shot. There is, of course, Jerry Lee Lewis portraying Jerry Lee Lewis, which is an interesting breaking of the fourth wall as well from that aspect. But we've also got, of course, I think three particular females and women actors who are within that whole series in terms of the actresses. Heather Locklear, as we mentioned, as Officer Stacey Sheridan. But then there are the daughter of Ben, or Ben's daughter, and who's the college medical student, Elise Edwards, played by Deborah Foreman. And then, of course, there's Mary Beth Parsons, who again looks very, very worried. The camera seems to hover over her in a big close-up when Jerry Lee Lewis identifies her as the girlfriend of the half-brother, basically. And I thought that was quite interesting. I mean, there's lots of fairly standard close-up shots here. Anyway, Victoria, who for you stood out? Who would you like to see more of? Who did you actually think deserves honourable mentions, and who ultimately takes it? Could this be the time where William Shatner begins to actually turn it round for your good self as somebody who's you know, actually got some decent acting chops?
No, I've always liked William Shatner. Don't turn this. It's the whole Star Trek sort of storylines. There you go. And no, I love William Shatner. I was five and had a crush on William Shatner. I would. There you go.
So, sounds like Jerry Lee Lewis's former girlfriends, but perhaps we better not go there.
Yeah, some of the acting, as I say, I think was slightly questionable. I felt like most of the time it was fine. I was watching the story, but there were times when, and actually it's quite often I find this in the 80s sitcoms, where you're actually watching actors act and not watching a storyline and a program. So sometimes it sort of stopped as well for me for that. But in terms of people, I quite liked, I'm going to get his name right. Is it Dennis Sheridan, the cop that ends up, the security guard that ends up in the hospital? Is that
Ben, I think, was the name for that point of view, the actual security guard who was actually there. Ben Edwards, played by Jesse Vince.
Got him. I think he did quite well, because there were several different nuances that he needed to get over at several different points, his relationship with all the different characters. So I quite liked that. Not so much some of the females, actually. But, you know, that's me.
Well, Cliff Potts, of course, as Detective Holland. And I think ultimately one has a certain sympathy with the fact that he clearly wasn't all bad, but events transpired in terms of, again, a narrative trope which was almost equivalent to seeing the Jaguar, white Jaguar, going over the cliff in ITC movies. This was the wrestling between two people, who one of whom has a gun, and inevitably the gun accidentally fires, resulting in the death of one of the people who's actually been wrestled with, which again was a standard line, which was the moral of the story is don't wrestle with somebody who's actually got a loaded revolver. Just saying. But it is important for that. Jessica, what about your favourite characters, honourable mentions and such like? Are you going to go down the line of Adrian Zmed and Officer Romano, or could you be persuaded to say, no, Heather Locklear managed to actually carry the whole thing off extraordinarily well?
I do think Officer Romano was really fun. I think he just seems like the kind of, he seems like a more of a headstrong, thoughtful character. And I think he and William Shatner's character, I think that they interacted really well. They had great like partner chemistry as street cops on a beat. And I thought that I thought that their little detective role was really great. I think that they're different characters, but they played off of each other very well. I think that was well casted. And I do like, is it Stacy? She was at the desk. I thought she was really charming. And it's nice that you mentioned that she kind of has more roles, like more action later. That's nice to hear, because her character was definitely just like, she stuck with me. So whereas sometimes in shows where I jump into the season, I kind of get, sometimes I can't keep the name straight a little bit and I kind of have to try to remember people, but she definitely, I didn't have any trouble remembering her. So I think she was also a really great character.
Okay. And of course, this is part of the Spelling Goldberg Empire, really. I mean, they would bring the world dynasty, to use the American translation from that point of view. Of course, prior to this, they had a huge success in the 1970s, the decade before Hooker launched, with both Starsky and Hutch and Charlie's Angels, both part of the Aaron Spelling and Goldberg production. Anyway, Jared, we won't talk about the music yet, but any particular characters that you would say, yeah, I think they did the business?
I would say at the moment, because I'm still a bit new to the series, I would say it is Hooker and Romero is his name?
Romano,
sorry, I'm getting him confused with the director. Romano, because I think I really did, like Jessica said, I really did like the relationship they had. I did like how Romano was a bit more independent away from Hooker as well, like he could make the really tough decisions, and I really did like the sort of the dynamic that they had. And I think maybe if I'd watched this from the start, it would have made a bit more sense to me for them, but just because I'm watching this from a little bit later onwards in the show, it's a bit hard to not get the like the proper relationships. But I think for the starter, for watching this episode, I really did enjoy those two together, and I think I would have loved to see them in more episodes.
I think this was the period in the 80s where the television drama hour had been reduced from 54 minutes and commercials to 50 minutes and commercials to about 44 minutes and commercials. Of course, this was going to be for a short time, literally just a few years before 1987 and the launch of Star Trek The Next Generation. So again, interesting in terms of that, which was coming in normally at a sort of 44-minute per episode line, long, of course, before Netflix decided to actually put all kinds of hour-long episodes together, which I appreciate if you're in certain parts of France, is simply a case of just a tease beyond compare from that perspective. What about the music, though, Victoria? I mean, Jerry Lee Lewis obviously takes front and centre stage with C.C. Rider, an interesting take on the classic. And then a whole lot of shaking going on. We launched this particular program with Great Balls of Fire because I thought, well, why not? And I'm sure that could also have been part of William Shatner's needs to actually run extremely quickly. But any thoughts on the music, how it was put together? Or did you just feel as though, well, it was functional. It did its job. It had the pace that was actually there. It had the excitement. It had the dynamism. And that's it, really.
No. I actually... I loved the music in this. It was dramatic enough, but not over dramatic. And like the music manager saying that when the guy was falling, and that was so beautifully done. I will say that the entrance, the beginning was a little bit long, but that's more to do with the titles than it was to do with the music, because it's a little repetitive. But other than that, I really liked it. And the fact that Jerry Lewis is sitting and doing all this music is brilliant. It was actually when I saw that at the end, and it was almost as though all the cast and crew had just gathered around to watch Jerry Lee Lewis performing a song, and you just got everybody going, wow, this is Jerry Lee Lewis and we're going to see it. It's brilliant. I would be like that.
Yeah, and have you ever actually worked with a keyboard specialist who's actually hammered a piano quite as much as Jerry hits the old 88s?
I'm, to his fairness, I'm going to say that he's up there. I don't know if anybody is as good as Jerry Lewis, but I would say he's up there.
Mm. Yeah, Elton John will probably sort of...
He can't play anymore.
It's true. Well, indeed. Elton John probably would have a sort of fair thing, but ultimately he didn't quite hammer the piano quite as much. Yes, yeah.
Elton John's not so much of a speed pianist. The speed that Jerry Lee Lewis can play, that's something else.
Jessica, as the recipient of the Arthur Weingarten contributor of the year for the Midweek Drive on two separate occasions, obviously back to back, clearly it falls to your good self to provide a notional score for this Arthur Weingarten co-scripted episode of TJ Hooker. Before we would actually get into, obviously, his work with Murder, She Wrote and other series on that point of view, and working, obviously, with Rick Husky, the producer, and Joe Viola. So what are you going to get off of us?
I do think that this is a really fun episode. I really don't have complaints about it. I think that I'm already a big fan of jewel heist plots, and I love shows that are very character driven around characters interacting and having that dynamic with each other. I enjoyed all the characters in this. I liked the plot twists. So I think I would give it an 8.5, but the fact that Arthur Weingarten wrote this and it wasn't involved in this makes it a 9 for me. So, I mean, but Arthur Weingarten is always a 10. His writing is always fabulous. But yeah, I really like this episode. I would watch more of JT Hooker.
TJ Hooker.
TJ Hooker.
Not to be confused with TK Maxx. People sometimes get the two confused and they expect to have a clothes show. No, and not a detective series with people shooting on the whole thing. So TJ Hooker, that's the line from that perspective. Jared, what about yourself? What's your score?
I would give this one a 7. I think coming into it new, I really did like this, the idea of the story. I think, as Victoria said, I think the intro, I wouldn't say it was too long, but it did drag out a little bit longer than, but then that, of course, those were the title cards or intros for shows like that. I did think occasionally the dialogue was just a little bit corny occasionally, but I guess that makes sense. I mean, if you have William Shatner, there's going to be some sort of corny dialogue in it. But overall, I think I enjoyed the episode and I would love to watch more given the opportunity.
Out of interest, Jessica, having now evaluated three of William Shatner's shows, obviously Cold Hands, Warm Heart, The Outer Limits last week, before that, the Star Trek episode, The Apple, and now, of course, Deadly Ambition. What order would you put them in terms of preference? The young William Shatner, the more mature William Shatner? I mean, we haven't even looked at his character of Denny Lane in Boston Legal, of course, but that'll happen, I'm sure.
You know, I think that's hard. I think that all of his characters were different, even the ones that were both space plots associated with Vulcans. But I think I did like the Outer Limits character. Like, I guess maybe just because it was different and I hadn't really seen that much before. So I do think Outer Limits would probably be the top one for me. And then I think Star Trek, because he's so iconic in that role, but I'm not as big of a fan as his character in that one. Of course, my favorite characters are the Tribbles. All of them. And then William Shatner. But I think that Hooker would probably be third, but not third is in like, they're all still on the podium, you know, they're all.
They all share the heroic DNA in many ways of William Shatner, which is quite interesting on that point of view. And Victoria, from your own perspective, what is your score going to be for this little adventure?
Well, I can prove to you that I actually really did like this, but I forgot to say that it reminds me of Life on Mars. Is it the BBC? I think it was BBC.
It was originally a BBC production, but it was a co-production with, of course, Mr. Glenister, Rob Glenister, I think, is the abrasive cop, and of course the time traveling partner. Of course, we had light, but that of course went into another series, which was Ashes to Ashes with Keeley Hawes, which followed through on that basis. Interesting. Was that because it kind of echoed? I mean, because Life on Mars was obviously set in the 1970s or the police procedures.
Yeah, and I thought that
70s.
Was quite interesting that they both. I sort of thought of one after another, and I think it was the plot lines that were a lot more similar, because in other detective ones that I've watched, sort of more Death in Paradise, something like that, it's a completely different genre of crime, if you like. So because I like Life on Mars, I also actually really like this one, and I give it a 9, only because some of the time the acting, they say, sort of cut, and I could see actors and not characters, but that's the only reason.
As our resident fashion expert, Jessica, any comments on the fashions that you saw of California circa 1983?
You know, I have to say, I don't think that the 1980s, in this one, I think they were wearing cop outfits and prison jumpsuits more than anything else. So I can't compare this to the really cool 60s American shows and, of course, the iconic British pop in the 60s. But I think that the outfit still, I think, looked nice. I don't think any of it looked cartoonish, which I think sometimes in like cop shows and things, they can look a little goofy. They look like they're playing dress up. But I thought that actually they all looked pretty good. And I think their hair looked really nice. I do have to say the hair, especially Stacey, fabulous.
And if you're going to actually be a police captain's daughter, you need to have good hair. That is critical. It goes without saying. We'll find out what Anna Koskinen makes of the show shortly. But for Fashion Police, a little trigger alert for the next episode of Resonance Rewind. We go back to the 1970s, in which cravats are very much to the fore. We're at the Cannes Film Festival. We've got Larry Storch, who's involved, known for his role in F Troop, etc. We've got a heartrending sequence with, of course, the financier and playboy Danny Wilde. And of course, his partner in crime, Brett Sinclair, who find themselves in Cannes having to deal with an assassination attempt on a union boss. Of course, Victoria, you may well be tuning into The Persuaders, because I believe you are also connected with Danny Wilde in the show we haven't as yet looked at. But I know you've put down on our list of things to come somewhere, which is Some Like It Hot. Tony Curtis, of course, Roger Moore. The episode is Angie, so good they've named it twice. So Angie. I shall say no more other than, of course, thanks to Jared Palmer, Jessica Burtis, Victoria Simmons, of course, and your good self, dear listener. I say Anna will hopefully be joining us. And next time, as we said, The Persuaders, Angie. Until then, keep on resonating. Here's more Jerry Lewis, or Jerry Lee Lewis. Thing, all right. Hey.
mama, tell your pa, I gonna send you back to Arkansas. Hey honey, you don't do right. I say you don't do right. The boogie woogie all night long. All right. Hey, hey. Huh. All right. Well, tell me what I say.
What I say.
Tell me what I say right now.
What I say.
Honey, what I say.
What I say.
Baby, what I say right now.
What I say.
Tell me what I say.
Oh.
Honey, what I say. And I wanna know. I gotta know.
I wanna know.
Baby, I wanna know right now.
I wanna know.
Baby, I wanna know.
Oh.
Baby, I wanna know.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Try this. Joey Bonner knows too much, and the boys he's playing with don't like loose ends.
All right, Beth. A friend of mine is lying in a hospital with two bullet holes in his chest, and he's looking at a felony prosecution, I think because he was trying to help Joey Bonner. You're helping to destroy a man's life, and what for? So you can keep Joey Bonner clean? It's too late for that. He stepped in dirt the first time he sat down with Cody Mayfield. If you don't tell us where Joey is before Mayfield gets a hold of him, Joey won't survive. Hey, sweetheart. Jail is better than dead.
He's in a motel on the San Fernando Road. The corral.
Lou, where's Holland?
What are you trying to say to me, lowlife?
What I'm saying to you is that you're practically our partner now, Holland. You know it? I mean, you went for it, old buddy. What do you got now, huh? You got some of the stones recovered, you got some second banana in custody, and Mayfield got away. And if either one of us gets picked up, we say that the cop was in on it all the way, just trying to make a big name for himself and cut himself in on a part of the proceeds, huh? Here, take a look at this. Take a real hard look at that. That's 5,000 big ones deposited in your bank account the day after the big bust. You know who did that? Old Cody Mayfield did that. Now what are we talking about here, huh? You think those people are gonna believe that their great big deal super cop wasn't in on this? Not a chance. You ain't squeezing me no more, Holland.
You won't get away with it, scum.
Try me, huh? We're sending your big, brilliant career right down the tubes. You can count on it. We own you, copper. We own you.
Okay, we've heard what Jessica and what Victoria and Jared make of TJ Hooker's adventure in this Arthur Weingarten scripted episode, of course, Deadly Ambition. But as promised, Anna Koskinel will obviously have her own views on the whole take. Anna, were you familiar with the character of TJ Hooker before? Had it crossed over to Romania?
Yes, actually I was. I didn't realize when I first heard the name, but when I started watching it, I realized I used to watch it with my mom and my grandparents when I was a kid back home, and I probably watched every single episode without knowing.
All five seasons. So this particular one, written by one of our Midweek Drive vets, of course, sadly passed away a year or so ago, and who, as we've said, has the Arthur Weingarten Award named after him. What did you make of it?
It was a good episode. I liked seeing that they put him and versus the detective as being the villain. And I especially liked the way that even though the detective was trying to undermine him all the time, he was able to keep his composure and act really nicely and official.
Yes, the point we were discussing earlier in the program, how clearly there was a moment where we know that Hooker himself rose to become a detective, but decided that he reached the chair, there was nothing there, so he went back to becoming a police sergeant and a cop on the beat, an echo, of course, of which we hear with Officer Romano at the end piece. So your favourite moments then? I mean, lots of them, obviously, in terms of Jerry Lee Lewis, a real-life musical extravaganza,
yeah.
Plus, of course, the interaction between Heather Locklear's Stacey Sheridan and Romano, and, of course, the mentioned but unseen Miss Pamela, who clearly Romano has a romantic attachment to until he realises that basically he's not necessarily going to be accepted into her particular social circle.
Yes. Oh my God. I had a lot of favorite moments and the music was absolutely amazing. So as for favorite moments, I'm thinking of two that I need to mention, which is the first one, the moment when they were on the rooftop and they turned the guns one to another and Hooker told him that it's done and he's been caught. And probably another one would be when they were at the hospital, Hooker with his partner, Officer Vince Romano. And Vince Romano saw Hooker's goddaughter. And he was like, oh my gosh, she's beautiful. And he was like, she's my goddaughter, pay attention. It was just funny. The whole episode, I think, needs to overall be mentioned. It's my favorite one up until now.
Really? This is high praise indeed for a series which, as I said, at the time certainly had its critics as being somewhat pro-Republican, pro-Ronald Reagan politics and so on. But nevertheless, maybe that's what's needed in the 21st century. And of course, William Shatner echoing his heroic characters. We obviously, in the last trio, we've seen him as his probably most famous incarnation, James T. Kirk. We saw him, obviously, as the astronaut in Cold Hands, Warm Heart previously. So here was one of his 1980s incarnations. So let's turn to characters. Who was your favourite character? And do you have any honourable mentions?
So probably, I don't know if everyone said that. Probably, I'm thinking they all said that T.J. Hooker was their favorite character.
Strangely, no. In essence,
really,
we just had Jared, I think, who definitely went for T.J. Vince Romano was basically up in the lead from that point of view, and I think even Stacey Sheridan got a mention.
Oh, okay. So he was my favorite character, but as an honorable mention, it's obviously Detective Holland, which I think he did an amazing job. And can I just say that it was so weird seeing people smoke inside again. And it was that feeling of seeing a movie that you already knew and had all those memories brought back. And then you also see them smoking inside and you're, oh my God, it's just like back in the day.
Yes, some might well say, thankfully, those days have long since gone because the number of musicians who died because of passive smoking in those very smoke-filled rooms, etc., clearly not a good health look in any way, shape or form. So I would have thought that if they do a remake, and not that one's been mentioned, but it would be interesting if they did actually consider that. As we said, the closest it came to a remake was a very short piece in the turn of the millennium movie version of Charlie's Angels. Where there's a T.J. Hooker the movie put together, and it's obviously an in-joke insofar as what another movie based on an old TV series. Do you think it should be revitalized? Do you think that the character of T.J. Hooker, that kind of heroic, hard-bitten detective slash street cop, who obviously lasted for five seasons back in the day, do you think it would actually cut any mustard in our more cynical 21st century decades?
I think it would be quite an interesting perspective to follow. And I think there are great actors who could make a great T.J. Hooker. But also, I do believe that it would be interesting to set like a cinema and play old movies for people, for 20-year-olds or for 15-year-olds, and just
show them what was back then, because, you know, I always say that remaking movies is not always the answer, and just playing them again, the old ones, and showing people what was back then, I think it's just better.
There is an argument, of course, that says that we already live in that wonderful postmodern world, not only with agencies like Talk TV and so on, or indeed Talking Pictures, I should say, but even the very ease of streaming, that means that relatively straightforwardly, we can access a whole range of material, as well as obviously physical media as well. But perhaps there's so much material that's actually out there. Sometimes shows like Residence Rewind are needed to kind of help people be guided through, or have little nudges and name checks in terms of whether this works or doesn't work, etc. And in the main, I think it's fair to say it generally does. Let's move to the numbers, though, Anna. What will be your score as far as the second season episode is actually concerned?
Well, overall would be a lower score, but because of the memories, and because I don't know, it just made my day and made me happy and made me ready to start the day talking about it. I'm going to give it a nine. Yes.
Well, as we said earlier, next week we will be heading back to the 1970s, so a decade earlier, when fashion choices were even more interesting. And two people that you have, I think, encountered before, Anna, Brett Sinclair, Lord Brett Sinclair, and Danny Wilde, played by Roger Moore and Tony Curtis, as we mentioned. They will be engaging in another adventure for The Persuaders here on Resonance Rewind. Again, just wrapping up once more, thanks to Jared, Victoria, and to Jessica, and thank you, Anna Koshkinol. Keep on resonating.
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless you. Thank you very much. I'd like to dedicate this next song to some personal friends of mine, Mr. Ben Edwards and his daughter Elise, not back over here. Jerry Lee Lewis, especially to you, killer. Hope you enjoy it. Oh, a whole lot of shaking going on. All right.
Whoa. Identification time here. Come on over, baby. A whole lot of shaking going on. Why don't you shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it all night long? Honey, I ain't begging. Whoa, a lot of shaking going on. Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. Come on, mama. Oh, a lot of shaking going on.
Back on the road?
No way. He told me that he'd like to hang around and see you graduate.
Why not? I feel I've learned how to be a real daughter this time.
You're terrific, you know that? I saw you. Hey, Romano. What happened to the string quartet? I didn't go.
So where's Miss Pamela?
All you gotta Miss do Pamela is nowhere is where she is.
You know how she introduced me to her high-class friends? Mr. Romano is a legal field practitioner. I'm a cop. I'm not ashamed of being a cop. I like being a cop. Who's she to apologize for me?
Give it to me now. 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 Hey, get the baby, shake it. Hey, get the baby, shake it. Hey, get the baby, shake it. Shake it, baby, shake it.
Cyrus.
What a scenario without siren radio. Turn up everyone, save a siren sound.
Siren radio.
Come Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA. Our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate. Keep on keeping up. Keep on keeping up.
Siren Radio.
Keep on keeping up.
Siren Radio.
Keep on keeping up.
Siren Radio.
Keep on keeping up. Save Siren Radio.